This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 21 with Lawrence Strant and is brought to you by the Computer Information Agency. Visit them on the web at www.ciaops.com. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and for this episode, I'm joined by Lawrence Strant from Melbourne. He is an Office 365 MVP, and strangely enough, he speaks the same lingo as I do. Afternoon.
G'day, Robert. How are you?
Not too bad. It's always good to get a friendly accent on the podcast. We don't need any translation or subtitles in this.
I'll make sure not to go too ocker.
Ah, I'm sure that there are people out there outside our national boundaries that do appreciate the Australian accent. There is quite a lot of it in the technology field. So to start off with on this episode, I'm wondering if you can just give people who are listening obviously a bit of your background about your business and sort of where you are at this stage of the game.
Sure thing. So I've been in the IT industry for about 15 plus years. Started off as a web designer, moved on to systems administration, Unix admin, a whole bunch of things in between. I'm a bit of an IT chameleon. And one of the things that kind of got to me over the years is customers of all sizes having to continue to purchase hardware. So just under 2 years ago, in fact, February 2010 was when we started Paradigm with the view of helping customers get into the cloud so they could escape the eternal IT life cycle and purchasing process of getting new equipment every few years just to upgrade. So yeah, we've been focusing on BPOS, the predecessor to Office 365, and a few other Microsoft cloud services, and that's pretty much what the business does. We absolutely love it, and I think we're seeing somewhere in the top 10 nationally for SMB customers. That's how much we love it.
Okay, so I think that's, you know, I suppose the theme of that we will be exploring, obviously, in this episode is looking at Office 365 from a particular partner perspective and the benefits, and also applying that to your business. So, I think it's important to give people an idea that obviously, you know, there was the predecessor BPOS, and now we're looking at Office 365, but they're still fairly new products in the whole suite of things. A lot of partners I deal with are still looking at and selling, SBS, Small Business Server, as their major component. So, I mean, what initiated you to move from a partner's point of view or from your business's point of view into the online world and taking the dive with the Microsoft, online services?
Look, it's a good question. And I mean, a lot of probably the 5 years leading up to Paradigm, I'd spent with Small Business Server. I've actually been using Small Business Server since version 4.0, and I'm quite a fan of the product and its price point. But one of the things I found was over the years that the servers weren't necessarily the easiest for SMBs to upgrade from when the time would come to either refresh the hardware or move to past the 75 user limit. And also that because of its tight integration, not that it was often, but it wasn't exactly uncommon for certain elements to break, which that would then break other sections of the server. So what I particularly liked about BPOS and now Office 365 is that customers could have access to SharePoint, which they could under SBS, but probably more importantly lately is Link Online, so that customers could have conferencing. Now, to replicate what they get with Link Online would require at least four servers on-premise, whereas now they don't have to use any of that. So yeah, for me, it was just really a transition away from having to sell a server just to get certain functionality to now being able to give that same level of functionality to organizations ranging from 1 to 1,000 and even higher.
So did you find that, you know, when you'd made the decision to move that way, that it was a difficult thing to integrate into your business, or did that transition into the online world come fairly naturally and fairly easily?
Well, there were certain elements that were quite easy because at the time we were dealing with Small Business Server 2003, and BPOS came around and it was built on the 2007 product range, which was a bit more akin to Small Business Server 2008. So that wasn't too difficult. But what it was about was learning the quirks of BPOS or online services, and learning what it could and couldn't do, and really just working around that. Because Paradigm was a relatively new business, we went in with the view that we won't sell on-premise service solutions unless they're part of a cloud. So dealing with SMBs, there really wasn't really any requirement to sell that. They just needed Exchange, which was given to them from the cloud, SharePoint and Communicare, and away they went. So it was actually quite simple.
So, I mean, on the other side of the fence is, how did you find your customers' attitude to, obviously, your business changing focus, but, you know, obviously the new products that you're talking to them about, the online products, I mean, was there, you know, good acceptance of that, or did you need to do a fair amount of convincing to get them to move into that sort of environment?
I think early on, they required, some customers required a fair amount of convincing, some required none at all. Because some were of the opinion, well, I'm just used to upgrading, so that's what I'll keep doing. So this whole concept of, well, I, you know, entrusting their services to be provided by somebody else was a bit new for them. And yeah, that was a bit of a challenge. So they had to get past that. Whereas other customers just went, they just didn't care. They just went straight to the cloud because they wanted the technology and the features that it gave. And they just, you know, didn't care about the rest of the details of where it actually sat or who ran it or what the uptimes were. They just said, I want access to that now.
Okay. So is the demand, do you think, for customers to keep up with the technology, to actually, you know, to be competitive? I mean, given the financial situation, a lot of cases people are actually sitting on older systems. But, you know, in the online world, you can obviously deliver those solutions and obviously more powerful solutions. Are you finding that is the major reason that you can go to a client and basically say, look, you know, we can move you from an SBS system to an online version of Office 365 and you get all the enterprise versions of this software? Is that the main enticement, or is it alternatively saying, look, you know, we can pay per user per month and, you know, write this off as an expense rather than having to depreciate that. Is you know, of those two, what do you think is the major driver for people to adopt the product?
Look, I think probably the most common one that we're seeing is the life cycle escape that people are looking at, where their server's coming for refresh. Or they're having issues with it and they need to get out. And so instead of, you know, a capital expense of another server and all the labor costs that go with it, moving to Office 365 becomes quite attractive. So I would actually say that that's probably the most common one. However, what we are starting to see is customers saying, well, I want the latest and greatest and I don't want to have to build a server for it. So we might see perhaps over the next 12, 18 months that shift changes a bit. There'll always be that life cycle refresh and escape customer that needs to get away from their server because it's time. But I think a lot more customers are starting to see what can be done in the cloud that can't necessarily be done cost effectively on premise. And they will start to, you know, move towards making the decision because of the features as opposed to the costs.
So obviously with Office 365, there's a number of different plans. So we've got the P plan for the small business plan. Then you've got the enterprise plans, the E1, E2 and E3 with different features in each. I mean, what are you finding is the greatest adoption? Are you looking at, are people just dipping their toe in with a smaller maybe E1 plan, or are they jumping in to the E3 plan, which obviously includes things like Office on the desktop as well?
We've got quite a diverse range of customers on Office 365. We've got a fair few on P. We've got more and more are starting to purchase either E2, E3. So we do have a fair few on E1. We've also got customers who are just on straight out Exchange Online or Link Online because that's the only function they particularly need. But yeah, we are seeing more customers say, well, I just want a better way to license my Office desktop software, so let me go straight for E3. Or they actually want the advanced functionality that comes out of SharePoint by licensing that particular suite.
So I think that, you know, one of the big things that I see out there is obviously the flexibility. I mean, like I said, you can generally, especially in the enterprise plans, you can mix and match. So you can start with a basic exchange option to get your exchange off premises. But then down the track, you know, when you see the benefits and the advantage of something like SharePoint or Link, you can generally just tack that on and scale that up and down. So it would seem that, you know, there is not a particularly preferred product. It's well suited simply because it gives customers that flexibility. I mean, is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. Customers really do like the fact that they can mix and match licenses and they can scale up and scale down at any point. One of the things that I will quite often do is if a customer just wants straight out Office 365 E1 licenses, I will generally suggest that at least a few of them go to the next license up so that they can at least see what it's like, because if they don't like it, they can go back down. And the same if they're on E2, then I'll try and get a few on E3 as well. It's quite an easy sales pitch, because it's just a case of, well, look, if you don't like it, just go back down to what the others are using in 30 or 60 days or 16, whatever you want it to be. So customers really do like that flexibility.
So I suppose the other another question, which is probably the elephant in the room, here in Australia, the ability to get Office 365 is slightly different from most areas in the world. For licenses or client sizes under 250 seats, we basically buy from our largest telco, that being Telstra. So if a client wants to buy Office 365, they have to generally go through Telstra to do that. And there is, obviously being a large telco and maybe focused in other areas besides online services, there can be some resistance to being involved with them as a partner. Telstra having the exclusive license, you know, has generated some bad publicity in some stages. I mean, what's your feedback on that? I mean, are clients happy to go with that sort of model? Is there any convincing that you need to do on that respect?
No, look, we've been doing quite a lot of business with Telstra customers, so that's obviously quite easy in itself. But by the same token, yes, we have a lot of customers that are outside of the Telstra camp. There's the occasional one that might have a real issue from personal experience that they just don't want to go with Telstra for some particular reason. But for the most part, people just say, well, if that's how it is, I want Office 365, therefore I have to go through Telstra. They just accept that there's no way around it, so just work with it.
Well, I think at the end of the day, that's the answer, isn't it? I mean, at this point of the game down here in Australia, that is the only option that we've got. So again, it's a case of making lemonade with that and working out how that suits your business model, and obviously working out how to address any concerns that customers may have. But as you mentioned, the alternative is that there is also business opportunity in there, and that's why Microsoft obviously hooked up with Telstra, is to look at, you know, selling services like broadband, additional broadband, mobiles, a full range of suites that Telstra can bring to the game. So there is business advantage, I suppose, in doing that as well. Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, definitely. We find a lot of customers are actually bundling their services together, or they find the ability to get things on a single bill quite simple for them. They like the fact that, well, if I sign up for a 12-month contract of my broadband or 24 months, whatever it might be, that they can get a discount on their Office 365 subscription. Now, obviously, the contracts are different and the discounts are different per customer, per volume, all those bits and pieces. But, yeah, they really do like the fact that, well, it's just all on the one bill. Don't have to worry about multiple carriers, multiple providers, multiple bills. It's just one monthly bill and they get everything on it. So, yeah, quite simple for them.
Yeah, and obviously it's easy for them to expense, and I suppose to an extent, like I said, it's become, as we're talking about, the move towards utility computing. So, again, the benefit is obviously to the customer for simplicity's sake generally. Mm. So let's again turn it back to a discussion for the partner. So if you can let us know, if I'm a Microsoft partner, whatever level, and I want to get into the Office 365 space, or what are the first things that I need to do to make that happen?
I think one of the first things is to actually adopt Office 365 internally, and not just in a lab environment, but in production. Because otherwise, unless you're actually dogfooding it and using it yourself, you don't know what it can and can't do. It's one thing to read the feature listing and perhaps some of the administration guides and go, oh, that makes sense. but you don't want to experiment on your customer, on your first customer, and learn the hard way that what you've sold them or told them it should be able to do, it can't. So that's my first approach, or my first suggestion is to use it yourself in production, how your customers would be using it, learn it. Same reason why I bought an iPad. I don't particularly like the device. I don't particularly find the user interface to be intuitive, but most of my customers have an iPad, at least one. So I needed to learn how to use it. And now, much to my wife's chagrin, I'm almost inseparable from it.
I'm sure that Steve Jobs is turning in his grave hearing that, and you know, maybe you're waiting for these so-called Windows tablets to eventually hit our shores. But I think the reality is that, like I said, they are a very common device, and they are used, you know, so in such a wide range of businesses that you do need to be aware of them. And dog fooding, you're right, is the way to go. So. The way, obviously, as a Microsoft partner is that you can sign up to be a Cloud Essentials partner, which is no cost. This involves doing an exam, a simple exam to get those abilities. Then the difference here in Australia is you also need to complete a Telstra agreement. That gives you a Telstra number you can put into your clients when you sign them up to get some recurring revenue. Once you've completed that and that's been approved, you then get a 250-seat license of Office 365 and E3 license that you can obviously play with and work, you know, and work and to understand the product. So I think that's probably the first step that again, most people who aren't involved in that, there is a free offering of the product available from Microsoft. So do you think that's the recommended process for those partners to get involved with?
Yeah, absolutely. It's key to work with it yourself first, be it for a few people, be it for the entire organization. I've spoken to numerous partners who have transitioned their entire company over to the internal use rights licenses or the free ones. And you know, now need to actually get more licenses because their company is actually bigger than the 250 licenses they get. So yeah, it is key to actually be using it yourself, experience what it's like. It's like being able to try and support a Windows 7 computer when you yourself are a Mac user. You just really need to experience it for yourself, and use it on a daily basis and understand what it can and can't do and what the extensibility of it is.
I suppose the downside that I found is that, you know, depending on the size of the partner, I mean, the E3 obviously is the enterprise SKU and is a fairly powerful high-end license. If you're selling and supporting the P SKU, which is the small business SKU, there are some obvious differences and some not so obvious differences between those two licenses that they could trip you up. So again, it goes back to your point about knowing the products, and with the Office 365 offerings, there are quite a range of offerings. So again, you do need to invest that time up front, I find, to actually understand what the offerings are, or you need to have resources or someone who can actually help you with that. I mean, is that, you know, obviously you're selling P's and E's. Do you find that as an issue you need to understand better?
Well, look, we definitely do need to know the differences between P and E, also to determine what the customer's requirements are, and also find that one thing that may be the differentiator between why they go with a P or an E license. And I think that's one of the things that people taking on, or organizations taking on Office 365 as Microsoft partners, need to really get their head around, because it's quite a messy mistake if you choose the wrong license, be it P or E. I mean, the differences between E1, E3, that's fine, you can switch between those, but you can't switch between a P and an E. You have to completely migrate out and back in again. So really have to be wary of the differences and make sure that you make that right decision for the customer, because ultimately, if you don't, it's kind of on you.
Yeah, I think that, and that's a very hard, you know, again, because the most enticing thing, obviously, about the P SKU is its price. It's aimed at the lower end of the market, $8.90, I think, off the top of my head here in Australia, and $6 or $7 out of the US. Again, it seems to be the most natural choice, because it encompasses, you know, Link, Exchange, SharePoint, but it's important to look at the fact that there are limitations around the user limit, around the advanced SharePoint features, around the Exchange, you know, archiving and mailbox sizes that can cause a bit of a problem. I think what I found generally is that I suppose my advice would be is always to look at selling the E3 license or the E licenses, A, to give you the flexibility, but B, typically what we find is that customers come to you and say, look, they want X, but 2 months down the track, they've really liked the product and they want us. Oh, we want to get Office via Office 2010 via Office 365. So we need to do the licensing that way. And then, well, if you're in the P SKU, that's a, like you said, it's a major effort. So again, like you said, it's important to go in there and understand the benefits. But my feeling is generally that the E is a much better way to go in first. And if they agree to go to a P, yeah, not an issue. But the E is a much better option, I think, to go in, because generally most customers do adopt it readily, and then they want those additional features which they can't get if they're generally a small business. This is the advantage, the enterprise features. I mean, is that when you go and talk to somebody about Office 365, is that sort of something you do on the qualifying process, or do you give them the whole range, or do you go in with the E3 is the one we're looking to sell these guys?
Look, I always go in there looking for the E opportunity, but quite often I will walk out going, well, that was definitely a P. Now, there might be several factors, some of which you covered, but because what can make them an E client can also work the other way and make them more potentially, towards the P license, given its price point and feature richness. But yes, obviously there's the detractions of, certain feature lockdowns or limitations or just not even existence. So it's very important to understand how the custom works. And I think coming back to that point before of knowing what the differences are, because it's one thing to understand the requirements and prescribe a solution around that, but you also need to ask, will you ever use feature X? Will you ever use feature this? How do you do this currently? Because some of that may expose whether the customer needs E or P.
Do you have a set of standard questions you would go in and ask a customer about, do you use this? Are you likely to use this? Is your business, those sort of things that you can help you qualify the license that they'd be after?
Yeah, look, we find it, I suppose because we do it every single day, we've got the whole qualification process down pat. So quite often I will be able to ascertain within a matter of minutes whether they can get P or whether they should skip it and go straight on to E. It comes back to experience. It comes back to knowing what to look for. There's been quite often situations where a customer said, yes, this is what we use, this is what we use, and it all sounds like P until I've heard them say one thing that to them was more about a business process, and I've just realized, no, that's, they definitely need E for that, and that's changed it.
Okay, so let's go back to our newbie Office 365 partner. Obviously, got in the trial and are using it, dog fooding it, blah, blah, blah. They come across their first opportunity. What sort of advice could you give them as to, helping them qualify, what sort of questions should they be asking the end user to understand what sort of licensing they would require?
Well, I suppose the first ones are going to be easily, how many users do you have now? What are your growth plans as a business over the next few years to see whether they're going to exceed the 50 user cap on P? Then asking things like, how much storage do you have? Because while SharePoint Online under E can be expanded up to quite a large amount, under P it can't be. You can't buy additional storage. So asking a couple of those. There might be, things like the fact that the P tenant doesn't have SSL security on SharePoint, so any traffic to and from, so effectively your data to and from your SharePoint site is unencrypted. To some customers, that might be a big issue. So look, there's quite a variety, but I think those are some key ones to at least get newbie partners started.
I think obviously that, like you're saying, is basically know the limitations of the plan. So, go and look in the plan and say, the P plan is you know, basically 25 user, but it can go up to 50. It has, you know, these limitations, doesn't support unlimited mailboxes. So again, if you can identify what those limitations are and be armed with a cheat sheet, I suppose, and go into the client, and as soon as you hear the magical, well, we need unlimited email boxes, then you can basically say, well, that, you know, obviously rules out the P tenant straight away.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's, again, we'll focus on our newbie partner. They go in to see a client and, you know, they can qualify the Office 365 tenant fairly well. But I think part of the secret to doing a good job is what else do they need to look for? So in your experience, aside from the Office 365 product, which licenses they need to buy, what other sort of questions or what other sort of things do they need to be looking at for the client?
Well, look at how, I suppose, mature their IT is. Look at what they actually need their IT to do. One of the things that we found was certain industries or certain industry types just didn't care about technology. They just wanted to be able to generate invoices. So to them, Office 365 was not exactly a great value proposition, especially, you know, things like SharePoint. Maybe they just wanted Exchange, and that was as far as it gets. Whereas other industries may already have, you know, complex document management systems that SharePoint just can't compete with. So there's a few things that really need to be addressed. Need to look at what existing systems they've got, how mature their IT is, what type of organization they are, and I suppose what systems they use. Because you might find that a particular organization spends all day inside of MYOB, or they might spend all day within their, logistics application. So understanding what the organization does, how they actually use their computers. Yes, just because everybody has Office doesn't mean everybody needs SharePoint, or everybody actually cares about Outlook. So yeah, it's really a case of understanding the business and how they work, what they do, and prescribing the right solution. I think a lot of that knowledge and experience comes from actually talking to the customer, as opposed to go in there and saying, I'm going to sell this today.
Mm. So, I mean, what's your take also? I mean, one of the most important things I find that needs to be dealt with up front, or needs to be examined up front, is obviously the customer's bandwidth, how much bandwidth they have into a business. Because obviously, you know, a lot of them have, let's say, discounted or you know, consumer-grade ADSL, consumer-grade routers. And that also means that obviously ADSL is asynchronous, having different up and down speeds. And if you're working with a large document, or you're working document management with SharePoint, the up speed's going to be the killer thing. So, I mean, obviously it's important to go in and consider their bandwidth. But, I mean, in your experience, do they need, synchronous, same up and same down? Is that a better bet than, you know, standard ADSL?
Look, it comes down to their usage. We have many customers that are on ADSL and quite happily using all elements of Office 365 with, you know, no impact based on their speeds. But then we have some customers who have actually needed to upgrade their bandwidth in order to move over to Office 365. So again, it comes down to what their technology usage is. Because as I said, they might want to use SharePoint, they might want to use Link, they might want to use Outlook, but they might spend all day in their local ERP or CRM application and occasionally use documents, and that's where perhaps selling them, you know, Office 365 E2 will come in well, because then they can use Office web apps for those quick edits or those quick document modifications, instead of having to pull the full document down to their local machine in order to edit it. So, while, I suppose, back to the original question, while yes, bandwidth does come into it, not often have I actually seen it to be a inhibiting factor. And part of that as well is comes down to user education, letting them know that, look, you already send and receive emails all the time and it uses your internet. It's just now when you send an attachment from one person to the next desk, that's going to go out and back in again.
So do you find that the majority of broadband connections that customers have are adequate? They don't need to make any change?
No, I do believe they need to have a business grade one. Mm-hmm. And that's not so much just to cope with Office 365, but probably more so to cope with the fact that they're in the cloud. So if they have a TPG home service or a Big Pond home service, and something goes wrong, it's not they're not going to get the same level of service that they would have from having a connection like Telstra Business Broadband, where you've got a 24 by 7 help desk and they can escalate it and actually check the line and a whole bunch of other bits and pieces to get the service working. Yeah, if they have a home grade service, then they're not really running a business grade service, and Office 365 is business, so you need to match it up with other business technologies.
So, what about the response to? I mean, we see that. I see this a lot. Is that customers come and they say, "Look, what happens when our ADSL, when our broadband fails? I mean, what redundancy, do you recommend when you go in and talk to them?" So, obviously, the dependency is greatly increased on the internet, and it generally is up 99.9% of the time, but the 0.01% that it may not be up is when they need to get their payroll or when they need to get their tax file done. What sort of, how can you address that for the customer?
Really easy. If they say, "Well, what happens if my internet connection goes down?" My simple response is get another internet connection. Now, while on at the outside that seems a little bit more complex than just that, but look at your device. Chances are that your mobile device that you have in front of you either supports tethering by internet cable or is capable of being a hotspot itself, such as Apple phones, Androids, and most recently Windows phones are able to be hotspots for internet connections. Perhaps have another cheap backup link in there, just in case using a different type of technology, even a wireless Next G type of service. Or, if all else fails, send your staff home with their computer or just get them to log in via the web, because the whole point of cloud is that, and Office 365 is that you can work from virtually anywhere, anytime. So, yeah, if your internet goes down in the office, get another one.
Yeah, I think the important thing is obviously is to bring to clients' attention that the fact that they are more dependent on their internet connection, and obviously if they're saving money by not having servers and things like that, they need to invest some of that money back into an internet connection, and that pays off many ways, not only for the Office 365, but probably for more applications as they move forward. And I don't think that there would be an employee who wouldn't want more faster access to external sites generally, if that's where their systems are moving. You've also, like I said, you've got the wireless technology. I think a lot of you can get routers obviously that support the ability to plug in a 3G dongle and give you that redundancy so that you can still get access. Obviously a little bit more expensive, but does provide that. As you mentioned, there's the you can even get prepaid, a handful of prepaid dongles that you can stick in machines to obviously get you by in a pinch. But I think obviously the most powerful solution is that there probably isn't many people without an internet connection somewhere at home. And again, the Office 365 gives them the ability to go home and more or less continue on with the majority of their systems and can still get work done. I think the other issue that we do mention to clients is that you can have offline access to a lot of systems, so again, configured correctly, so you can still get access to your Outlook offline. You obviously can't receive new emails or send new emails, but you can work on the information you have. SharePoint Workspace, which comes with the E3 license, gives you the offline ability. There are third-party tools. So again, there are ways to mitigate it, but it's an important part to basically go to a client and say, look, there are going to be at some point service outages. You're never going to get 100% reliable, service. If this is important to you, how do we obviously structure our solution around that? So I think that's again an important question to bring up with customers. So again, it's brought up front and they do understand it.
Absolutely.
So I think that probably the other question I'd have for you is that Office 365 requires Outlook 2007 or better. Do you see a lot of people, hanging on to their Office or their Outlook 2003 because it's what they've always used, what they're always familiar with? Or do you find people are happy to abandon it with, throw it away to get the latest version? I mean, what's your experience with that?
Look, there's been a few customers, very few, that have had Office 2003 and haven't been interested in moving to a newer version, mainly because they don't like the ribbon. To those customers, and unfortunately this sounds blasé, if they at this stage still aren't adopting the ribbon, then there's no chance I can get them to the cloud, because they're just going to find a variety of other issues with that particular technology if they're not willing to adopt and move forward, and are quite happy using a, what is it now, 9-year-old product. Then unfortunately, I have to say, but you know, good luck to them. However, we do have a lot of other customers that, you know, have had perhaps Office 2003 installed on a couple of other computers, that have just simply not been upgraded, or they've perhaps used an old license. And to those customers, they've gone, yep, all right, not a problem. We will, you know, go down to the shop and buy a new copy, or yes, we've got an E3 license, and we'll just install that. So, yeah, look, most customers quite happy to move. The customers who don't want to move, I can guarantee that no amount of convincing that I do will move them away from their menu bar that they still so preciously want to keep.
But you're finding that's less and less of a, yeah, less and less of an issue.
It comes down to a person.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually one person at the organization who is desperately holding on to it and tells the others to hold on to it. Mm-hmm. And I usually give one line and I judge the reaction based on whether I wrap the meeting up then and there, mm-hmm. which is that chances are their staff are using better and more advanced technology at home,
mm-hmm.
because important. They would have received Office 2003 or 2010 with a new computer. So when they come to the office, it's actually hampering their productivity. So based on the reaction I get out of that is whether I'll continue the meeting or whether we can shake hands and walk away.
Mm, okay. Well, that's fair enough. I think, you know, there is less and less, but I think when you point out the age of the product, and like I said, the instances where I've installed Office 2010, Office 2007, and the initial reaction is people just freak out because it's all different. And you just say, look, you know, just bear with me, use it for 2 weeks, and I guarantee your life will be so much better. And and like I said, you know, 99% of people say, look, yeah, I'm so glad, it's just so much better, I really like it. Again, you've just got to get over that initial.
Absolutely.
Initially. And part of that, again, here's another opportunity for the reseller, is to look at providing training and you know, as I think, you know, we've both done a blog post on this, is basically I see a lot of resellers that selling SharePoint but also Office 365. All they want to do is run in there, throw in the product and get out the door as quickly as possible, and then turn around and complain that they're not making money in the online world. I just think that there's so many more opportunities, and I would assume that you agree that that is the case.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, I suppose the example I used of shaking hands is, it's a very rare one. It is one that I've had to do, I could count it on one hand. And it's a case where one person just has a death grip on their menu bar and they refuse to change. And that's not an organizational thing. It's just because that one person who happens to be the key contact just wants to stick with what they know and doesn't want to change. And they aren't really looking out for what's best in the organization's interest from a holistic point of view, just from their limited knowledge. And yeah, these are people that have probably had the ribbon, you know, explained to them, demonstrated to them, and they just refuse to change. And yeah, so there's not much you can do. And as I said, out of the, I think, 150 plus customers that we've got, yeah, I could count, and probably over the, you know, the few hundred that I've actually gone to speak to about BPOS and Office 365, the amount of ones that it won't change from Office 2003, I could count on one hand. So it's very rare.
Okay. So let's revisit the ghost of Steve Jobs here. What's your finding with the Macintosh side of things? Is that a growing side of businesses? Are more businesses implementing Macintosh, or are they a rare commodity still to the link to the one artistic person in the office?
Look, I think probably up until about a year or so ago, that the latter would have been the case. There would have been just one or two in an organization. But as more and more people are purchasing things like the MacBook Air, which is beautiful, thin, and at a very good price point, a lot more people are simply choosing to have those, you know, beautiful machines on their desks instead of you know, their clunky Lenovos or HPs, which granted are catching up in terms of beauty, but still don't have that market like Apple does. So I think that Office 365, especially in the last few months, has done amazing things in terms of catching up to Mac users. So we've now got Link on for Mac 2011. We've got better support for Safari.
Thank God it works. Thank God it works in Office web apps now, is all I can say.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, even the Link client got off to a shaky start because it didn't work straight away. There had to be a patch, which was rolled out a week later. But yeah, for the Mac customers we have, and we've got a few that are, you know, pretty much most Mac, and they might be recruiters, they might be lawyers. They're not necessarily creative people. They just like Macs. Yeah, they're using all the features of Office 365 as if they're a PC user.
So you won't hold it against them that they've got a Mac.
No, not at all.
You'll take their money because it is the same color generally.
Well, that's the thing, is I'm not selling the operating system. I'm selling the cloud. So, and the whole point of it is that it should work on every device pretty much the same. That's what I'll take.
And I think that's, again, that's another key element to look at, is that, you know, with the cloud technologies, is, you know, you can look at it on so many devices, and again, you can get into so many businesses that probably may have been closed shop before, and again, it gets you out of this constant upgrade cycle, this constant need to apply patches, and this version's not right and that version's not right. So again, it's a matter of looking at the benefits, and again, you just don't know that until you, as you've mentioned before, is to dog food your own environment. So again, that's another big benefit to a partner to getting into it and actually using it so they understand it.
Absolutely.
All right, so we're sort of drawing towards the end here. What we might do is focus on, you've got your newbie partner and they've maybe sold one or two, or they're looking to expand that role, and there's a huge amount of technical information and product information they need to be across, that, again, they may not have the resources to do that, to do a proper job. In your experience, what sort of techniques should these partners be employing to make sure they give the customer the best Office 365 experience they can?
I think one of the key things that any organization needs to do is to recognize their weakness and what they're not necessarily the strongest at. Identify that and work to remediate that, either by, you know, getting additional resources on board, or, you know, focusing more on it, or, you know, even partnering with other organizations. For example, with us, we do a lot of SharePoint work, we do a lot of Exchange because it's all built around Office 365, but we don't do Microsoft CRM online. We have a partner company that we go to work with. Now, there's nothing to stop us doing CRM online, and, you know, certainly Microsoft have tried to get us to do it, as is their current push, but our view on it is simply that it's not our core focus. Yes, it's online, but it's a different business system and one that we don't necessarily have the resources, so therefore we'll work with an organization that specializes in it. So I think the same thing can be said for Office 365. If there's organizations out there that don't have strong Exchange skills, or don't, you know, especially have strong SharePoint skills, partner up with another organization that does. Don't be afraid. A lot of partners do want to work together. They don't bite and they won't steal each other's customers. Find the right partner and work with them.
I was going to say that obviously that's a key question, because, you know, partners are probably juggling a number of technologies, and, you know, they see the cloud as being important and they know they need to move into the space, but lack of resources. So they don't, and they know they need to obviously get involved with partners. I mean, what is your recommendation to find a good partner, or what's a way to get involved in a space that they can find someone to partner up with? What's the best way to go about that?
Well, I think that one of the things they can do, because anybody who's selling Office 365 is now by default a Telstra partner. So first thing is dig up the business card and contact details of your T-Suite, what is it, channel manager?
Yep.
Your TCSS, or TC Channel Sales Specialist. Speak to them and say, hey, I'm interested in selling Office 365 to our customers, but we need some assistance. Who can you recommend? Also have a look at Pinpoint, you know, pretend to be a customer, have a look at who the top partners are, in the Office 365 space, make contact with them and see if they have a program to work with other partners, if they have other partners that they do work with. Alternatively, send an email to director@ciaops.com or lstrant@paradigm.com.au and see if we'll do work with you.
Glad that we got those plugs in. Yeah, we've paid for our time today. I think...
The key is to really, it's to not be scared. As I said, a lot of partners are good partners and don't want to steal each other's businesses, or steal each other's customers rather. So it's a case of just do the research and say, hey, can we work together and try a few out?
I think that my experience has been is that one of the greatest techniques that you can use is obviously the social media stuff. So I know a lot of partners, you know, poo-poo it and they think it's a big waste of time. But used effectively, like I said, you know, tools like Twitter, LinkedIn, blogs, those sort of things are very powerful. It's a matter of finding the people to follow and finding the right people, and it might take you a little while. But generally, the people who are, you know, who do the good work are generally the ones who are out there publishing information or making themselves available or getting involved in user groups or, you know, going to conferences and things like that. So I think that, you know, it's interesting that in this day and age that there are so many social media tools, and unfortunately, you know, they've been, you know, put down because, again, a lot of people do not use them correctly. But my analogy is that email is exactly the same. I mean, have a look at it. You know, how many emails are really legitimate and I suppose really worthwhile you reading, but you wouldn't do without them. So I think social media is the same. So my advice to people, apart from what you're recommending there, is obviously is to get involved with a community of people, whether that's a user group or, like I said, through social media, following people's blogs and you know, finding out people who are good in the space. But again, you know, talking to people, you know, meeting with them, you know, finding out what they want, finding if it's a good fit, is the way to do it. And the sooner that you do that, the more likely you are to find somebody that you can work well with. So I think that's, you know, good advice for everybody.
Absolutely.
All right. So is there anything that you would like to mention or we haven't sort of shed light on today?
Look, we could probably sit and talk for hours as we have in the past and always do with other partners like ourselves. I think the main thing that partners need to look at is to not be afraid of Telstra, not be afraid of Office 365, to embrace it. It is the way that things are going. It is what customers want. It's probably one of the few times we'll ever see in our industry that customers will actually request a specific product, as opposed to saying that they want to complete a function. Now they'll actually start saying, I've heard about this Office 365, I want it. So embrace that, work with it. I think also focus on what you can drive further out of Office 365. It's not just a mailbox in the cloud. We've had that for many, many years. It is a lot more in the cloud. It's communications, collaboration. And I think as partners, we should be trying to get our customers to adopt as much of the suite as they can and use it as much as they can in their business. And as customers, you should be demanding more from your partner. If they're not telling you how to improve your business processes and collaborate better, ask them why they're not. Ask them who can help.
Okay, so probably the final question I'll put to you, and again, you know, it's up to you how you answer it. I mean, what's your response, obviously, that Microsoft's Office 365 is not the only product in the space, I suppose? I mean, do you see a lot of competition from Google Apps, or do you get a lot of questions about the comparison between the two products, or is it a non-issue, are you finding?
It's definitely an issue, but it's not a big issue. There are people who, I suppose, similar to people who don't want to leave Office 2003, there are people who don't want to leave Microsoft Office full stop. So they want to stick with Outlook, or they're familiar with SharePoint, or they have built solutions around it. So they're not going to leave Microsoft by any stretch of the imagination. So Google is a non-issue to them at all. There are other people who will consider it because Google's price is so much cheaper or simpler, or there's no licensing complexities or variation around it. We see some customers will go to that. Some customers will choose it purely on price regardless. I think a lot of people forget that when looking at competitors such as Google, Lotus Live, if that even has a presence in Australia, Zimbra, you know, and some of the other ones out there, like even just a hosted Exchange, hosted SharePoint platform, an Office 365-esque type solution from somebody else. There's a lot of factors out there that they need to consider. not just price point. You need to look at service level agreements, need to look at interoperability, support times, what upgrades are included, how data is housed, privacy, a whole lot of things that people really need to be aware of. And I think that what they'll find with Office 365 is that it ticks far more boxes than any other solution. And that's just something they need to really kind of be aware of.
Yeah, I think, again, that's obviously, you know, teaching yourself as a partner is to understand the competition. It's the same with anything. And again, I don't think it's a big issue, but you do need to be able to answer those questions. And for some people, yeah, they may want the Google solution. They may prefer it, though, for whatever reason. It's much easier to move on to the easier sale to the people who are familiar and comfortable and want to use the Microsoft technology. So there's not a need to get into a religious debate about the product. At the end of the day, it's about selling a product and making a profit as a business and walking away, you know, with a happy customer. So I think that's the thing that resellers need to focus on.
Yeah.
And you can do that with you know, any product. But, you know, obviously, if you're a Microsoft house and you've come from that and you've invested time and effort in those technologies, you're going to get much better payoff and much faster run-up, lead-up times if you are go to the Office 365 solution.
That's right. I mean, it's kind of like your V8 supercars. It's pretty much a two-horse race. There's Ford and Holden, or in this case, Microsoft and Google. Some people will always go Google. Some people will always go Microsoft. Other people will make the right decision based on the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's true. And I think, again, as a reseller, look, there are opportunities there. It's about getting your business model right and then investing in that, and you'll get the payoff. So, but as you say, the most important thing is to understand the product and to dog food it yourself and actually use the product so that you can be confident when you go out and sell it that you know the features, or, again, partnering up with somebody who can assist you in doing that sort of thing. So I think it's definitely the way to go. All right, so I think we do need to wrap it up and let everybody get on with the rest of their day. What I'll do is, Lauren, I'll just get you to, give us your details where people can get in contact with you, how they can keep up with what's going on, and if they do need to contact you or do want some help with Office 365, how would they go about getting in contact with you?
Sure. So the first point of call would be my company, Paradyn, so www.paradyn.com.au. That's Paradyne. Or you can look me up on Twitter under the Cloudmouth, or just type in my name to Google or Bing and I'll come up in the top search results and you can follow the breadcrumbs from there.
Excellent. So what I'll do is I'll put some of that those links obviously in the show notes that I post up when this becomes available. But I'll take this opportunity to thank you for the time you've obviously put out today, and I think that anybody who's listening has obviously got a great benefit out of your experience and also the views that you've expressed here. And let's hope that if they do need some assistance or want to get started, they are able to contact you and go from there. So again, I thank you very much for the time that you've put in here today.
Thanks very much for your time and for having me on, Robin, and for everyone for listening.
No problems. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Need to Know podcast. This is Robert Crane signing off for this episode. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.